Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM at Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Erin Dolan. We just did our NBA All-Star Redraft, and now we want to kind of talk about some of the things that are actually happening. So for Team LeBron, right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, they're -3.5 over Team Durant, and the total's at 308.5. Kevin, any initial thoughts on this? And maybe tell our listeners, for people that are just new to watching NBA All-Star games, why this total would be 308.5.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, there's not a ton of defense played in these games. Everybody has come to accept that, but people might actually be looking at this total, Erin, and think that it could be a little bit light, right? Because we saw games, you know, you go all the way back to 2017, the West won that game. It was the game in New Orleans where AD had like 50 and was the MVP. That score was 192-182. But then they did the, you know, it was Team LeBron versus Team Steph, and it's, you know, Team LeBron this year against Team Durant. A little bit more at stake. There's kind of some bonuses there. So teams have been playing it a little bit tighter. But what's also very important for people to remember, the Elam ending is going to be sticking around. It puts a cap on the maximum amount of points that can be scored. They're going to have to look to hit a target score here. So if you look at last year, and this is, they started this last year, and so if you look at last year's game, 94 points in the first quarter, 81 points in the second quarter, 82 points in the third quarter, the fourth quarter, 55 points. And again, that was about the maximum amount of points that could have been scored in that fourth quarter. So here's what I would say. If you have it offered to you, and we don't have this up just yet, I don't think we can, we can start messing around with quarter scores and things like that. Race to 10. Once we get the totals for quarters and halves, first quarters, over. But second half, that's where you're going to look to the under as they look to try and keep things a little bit more respectable. The total, Erin, is great to play live. That would be my advice on the total.
Yeah, that's some good advice there. So we have the skills challenge and the three-point contest. That will be pregame. Slam dunk contest is set for the halftime. Then the league and players agree to a one-night event in Atlanta. That will obviously is going to include both the game and the All-Star Saturday night events, all set for March 17th there. So there's going to be no fans. So what's interesting about the skills contest is usually they're feeding off that, especially, let's say, for the dunk contest and things of that nature. So let's look at the odds right now for the skills challenge contest. So Chris Paul, plus 230, Luka, plus 250. Do you like these two players right there with some value, or are you going to go with somebody else on the board?
So I actually really enjoy betting in these. Just so people know, we will not be getting odds to win the dunk contest. It'll be fun to talk about. It'll be fun to watch. But I actually spoke to someone last year at FanDuel about this. It's kind of like why they don't have odds on who can win the Emmys. It's because it's voted on and they don't want to do it that way. And when you consider what D-Wade did last year, it's probably for the best. My value pick, though, here, Erin, and honestly not even value, my pick to win the skills challenge, plus 750, Domantas Sabonis. Big men have actually been good in this skills contest since they've joined the fold, and Domantas Sabonis was the runner-up last year to Bam Adebayo, who won this. So I actually think we're going to see Sabonis come out here, claim the title, and he's plus 750 to do so.
Interesting. And welcome in a radio audience. You're listening to The Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM, Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Erin Dolan. We're talking about the NBA All-Star Weekend. Let's get into the three-point contest. There's a lot of good names. We have Booker, Brown, Curry, LaVine, Mitchell, Tatum. Right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, Curry's favored, plus 195. Then you have LaVine, plus 390. Jason Tatum is sitting in last on the odds board, along with Jaylen Brown, a plus 650. Where do you see value in the three-point contest?
So I want to ask you a question, Aaron, here. Maybe you'll know the answer, but I don't think most people would know the answer to this kind of question. I had to look it up myself yesterday. Steph Curry has been in six three-point contest shootouts. How many do you think Steph Curry has won?
Two.
Only one. Only one. And it was a good
only
guess.
Only one. I was close.
No, you 100% were. Oh, he's only won one of these things. So I understand Steph is Steph. But plus 195 isn't the value that we perceive it to be, at least in my opinion. Zach LaVine is going to be
Zach
in this.
Zach LaVine's been so good lately.
He's in this now for the second time.
Good value.
Yeah, guys that play in it for their second time actually do pretty well, I've seen. But I'm going to take Devin Booker. Devin Booker has also won this. He has the highest scoring round that's ever happened in three-point shootout history. This is going to be Booker's fifth three-point contest. So I look at this. The experience is there for Steph and Booker, Donovan, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. I think it could be Tatum's second appearance as well. I think it's the first go-around for Donovan and Jaylen Brown. But I think the value's there on Devin Booker because I think he should be much closer to Steph Curry in the odds. They are both defending three-point contest champions, but one of them is plus 480. I like Devin Booker as a value play in the three-point contest.
Interesting. And these are all available right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook. You can go bet on these. But one thing you can't bet on, like you said, Kevin, is the dunk contest. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, listen, we can't bet on it, but I can still give you a prediction here. My expectation is Cassius Stanley wins this thing. This is all you got to do for stuff like this. Go on YouTube, type in the players, and you will see quickly why I think it's going to be Cassius. Stanley can jump out of the gym. Quite literally, he is... He is incredible. He can't literally jump out of the gym, but he's got hops, and I think he gets the job done.
It's so interesting. I feel like that's the category that most agents are calling, saying, help my player get into this for some exposure. Stay with us here on the Early Line. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM at Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, guys. Earlier in the show, we talked about the NBA. We did our NBA All-Star Redraft. And now we want to talk about some college basketball. But I also want to mention that we are going to have on MMA journalist James Lynch later in the show to talk all things UFC 259. That's an exciting fight this weekend, Kev.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to talk to James about it. Three title fights, Blachowicz Adesanya, you've got Nunez Anderson, and then Jan Sterling. Three great fights. That's going to be on Saturday. I think that's where a lot of people's attention will be on the night slate. So excited to get his thoughts and insight on that.
Yeah, and I feel like in these three title fights, not to get too much into it, because I know we are in the later segment, but just there's some interesting odds there and some interesting plays. There's some, obviously, like Amanda Nunes, she's long odds, but, you know, if anything can happen in these types of fights. We saw that when Conor McGregor fought Dustin Poirier. So I feel like these fights have been really interesting lately and kind of fun, so it's exciting we'll be able to watch them on Saturday. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I want to talk to James about, because he can, you know, not only kind of provide the big picture, but some betting insight as well, is, you know, trying to find creative ways to bet some of these fights. That method of victory option offered on the FanDuel Sportsbook is always a great way to, it's almost like, it's kind of a parlay, if you will, right? It's a, you pick the fighter and the method, and you get much better odds. You can take Amanda Nunes, who is minus 1,200 to win her fight, down to about even money to win by knockout. I mean, that is, imagine, you know, getting Gonzaga.
That's a great way to play it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Gonzaga money line somehow all the way down to even money, right? Like, there, it's, you know, it's such an interesting way to play in these MMA events. There's a lot of different ways to approach it, and it's always exciting when you have a card of the magnitude of UFC 259.
Yeah, and just a little betting tip here. Throwing Amanda Nunes at minus 12,000 into your parlay is not going to get you any type of big return. It is not something you want to be doing. It's not going to get you any value. Yes, you're adding another fighter, let's say, to your parlay, but it's not as much as you think it's going to help you.
It's
I always
the worst
feel like
idea.
That we've been talking about that trend. Yeah.
100%. Yesterday.
Those are fighters, yes.
Look, and yesterday, because MMA parlays are very, very popular. And they are because it's all money lines, right? There's no spreads. It's all money lines, right? So parlaying them, it makes a lot of sense. It's the way our guy George Kurtz likes to approach the hockey board. I know people love their baseball parlays. Same deal. But somebody of that magnitude, it doesn't help you that much in your parlays. Yesterday, Kansas played UTEP as 17-point favorites. Now, they ultimately won the game by 5. Aaron, they were down for the first 35 minutes of the game. Like, why would you ever put somebody of that size of a money line? You take a minus 110 parlay to even money? Keep the $10. Don't have that extra risk. It's a great point by you.
Yep. And I always feel like, not to relate this to the NFL, but that was like the Chiefs. Everybody would always have them every week in their parlay money line. And then when they lost to the Raiders, it was like, oh my gosh, we had them at obviously all this money, and minus money, and it just didn't work out. So I don't like taking those long shots to just throwing them in a parlay to get some type of really small margin of return there. But let's get into some college basketball games. We had a Big 12 battle last night. Texas Tech crushed Iowa State 81-54. Not surprising, considering Iowa State is now 2-20 and now 3-10 against the spread. Under hits, Mac McClung drops 20 for the Red Raiders. Anything noteworthy to take away from this game?
Yeah, the thing about this game, the reason why it's important to mention, is Texas Tech really trying to close things out strong here. They had lost three games in a row: West Virginia, Kansas, Oklahoma State. Nothing to hang your head over, but they bounced back with a great win over Texas, and they have not let their foot off the gas. Dominated TCU, dominated Iowa State. They finished things off in the Big 12 regular season against Baylor. That is a monster game for the Red Raiders. If they could win that game at Baylor, the momentum that they would bring into the Big 12 tournament would be undeniable.
And it's all about that momentum, I feel like, for these college athletes. You see, when they get hot, they're hot. And when they cool off, they cool off. And speaking of that, number 15 Texas versus number 16 Oklahoma last night. Oklahoma has dropped 4 straight games, closing the regular season with a loss to Texas at home. The Longhorns cover and the under hits. Great win for Texas. I mean, we can talk about this all day, but I honestly want to ask you, Kevin, what does this mean for the Sooners?
Yeah, this is not good right now, what's going on for OU, because it's not, again, the Big 12 is great. You could argue the Big 12 is better than the Big 10. They're definitely the two best conferences all year long, 100%. But this all started with an outright loss to Kansas State, who is horrendous. That was a game Oklahoma were double-digit favorites in. Then they play their rival in Oklahoma State in Bedlam, host the first leg, lose it in overtime, then play them a short turnaround. 2 days later, they drop the second game as well. Now they come back home trying to get right against Texas. This is not – they have now lost, Aaron, 4 straight games, all as favorites.
Yep.
So this isn't like, oh, listen, what do you want from them? I want to win somewhere here. Their regular season has come to a close. The Sooners are playing their worst basketball of the season at the worst time possible.
Do you expect the Oklahoma Sooners to then be unranked pretty soon if they continue this?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Do you see that happening? Or do you see them kind of staying this spot around, you know, from 16 to 20 maybe?
Yeah, you know, if you look at it, 3 out of the 4 losses are to ranked teams, Oklahoma State, 2 of them, and Texas, the other. Mm-hmm. They could keep their spot somewhere in the top 25. I am more interested, Aaron, in to see how they are priced for the Big 12 Conference Tournament when that bracket is finally set, and we'll be able to break that down, I think, next week, and get a sense for how the Sooners are priced. Because, and look, everybody wants to win their conference tournament here, but OU will come in with maybe a little bit more urgency than some of their counterparts because they're going to have to try to make up. This is an Oklahoma team, Aaron, that had cracked the top 10 before this losing streak. So they're going to look to try to make back some of that goodwill in the Big 12 Conference Tournament.
And I know we just talked about how Oklahoma dropped two games to Oklahoma State. And last night, Oklahoma State played Baylor. Baylor just secured the school's first Big 12 men's basketball title. We talked about this earlier this week. But Baylor returned home. They completed a regular season sweep over Oklahoma State, beating Oklahoma State, 81-70, halting the Cowboys' five-game win streak. What's your biggest takeaway? Because I don't think that this loss means the Cowboys aren't good.
I agree. I agree 100%. This game finishes as an 11-point victory for Baylor. The second half, though, was pretty close. Cade Cunningham scored 20 second-half points. Now, he left this game with an ankle injury. That would be the most devastating thing to happen. I mean, it would.
Yeah, we have to keep an eye on that.
It would be crushing to lose Cade Cunningham. Hopefully, that's not what happens here. But I think Oklahoma State, again, at Baylor, they built up a lot of goodwill. I'm impressed by that squad. But Baylor is fine. Like the all the like, oh, Baylor's not as good. See, they're from no. Clearly, the COVID pause messed them up. They are now back to their usual selves, and I really do like this Baylor team. Jared Butler is awesome. Davion Mitchell, I think it's because his name's Davion Mitchell. He wears 45. I just feel like I'm watching Donovan Mitchell, and I know I shouldn't do this, but it's like that's just how I feel. Like it's D. Mitchell, number 45. Mako Teague, one of my favorite names in college basketball. They've also got Flo Thamba, probably my favorite name in college basketball. They're just a really, really good team. They are. They're deserving Big 12 conference regular season champions, and we'll see what they can do in the tournament.
And what's interesting is when you have like a Cade Cunningham, you have a star on a team, and God forbid they actually are injured and they're out. This just happened with Colin Gillespie and Villanova. How important is it for these teams that they lose their star player? It's not like their bench can step up like in the NBA. It's not like they have multiple shooting guards.
100%. Villanova's also now started to fall a little bit. That team was the fourth or fifth choice to win the tournament. They're now back down to 20-1 to win the NCAA tournament. Colin Gillespie is a big absence for the Wildcats. We'll talk about this and more next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM at Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Erin Dolan. We're going to recap two more college basketball games and preview some and then get into some Big Ben conversations. So let's start off with the Michigan-Michigan State game. Michigan, it's no joke. They're the real deal. They're good despite losing their last game to Illinois. They beat last night in-state unranked rival Michigan State 69-50. The Wolverines are 16-5 against the spread, while Michigan State's 8-17 against the spread. Any takeaways from this is the Spartans went 0-4-9 from the three-point line.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, look, that's unbelievable. To finish a game with no threes made in 2021 is almost impossible, but that's college basketball sometimes. It's a great bounce back for Michigan off of their worst performance of the season at home, and you kind of thought that could be coming. You felt like they probably would be very locked in for this game against Michigan State. They pulled away towards the end of the first half and kept their foot on the gas pedal in the second half here. I'll say this, though, just to even talk about one game to watch this weekend. These teams will be playing again. And for Michigan State, we talked about this yesterday, Aaron, when we were previewing this game. Why we liked Michigan is, for Michigan State, you had to be honest about yourself. You had two crack at the Wolverines. It was probably going to be the second one, because not only was Michigan off of that terrible loss, but well, now you're going to be home. Michigan State walks into that game this Sunday with the possibility to clinch a spot in the NCAA tournament. Maybe not. Again, there's been a lot of things that have been really bad for that team. But if they can close out the final month of college hoops with wins over Illinois, Ohio State, and Michigan, I have to think that is good enough to get the Spartans into the big dance. We'll see, but a massive game. One of the biggest regular season games that Tom Izzo has had to coach for Michigan State in quite some time.
And speaking of teams that are going to have to play a two-game homestand, so Nebraska played Iowa last night. Iowa wins 102-64. They cover. The over clearly hits for bettors. The Hawkeyes are 10-5 at home. Last night, the spread was -16.5. Again, they covered that. The over, 152.5. Any thoughts on this? Obviously, I mean, Iowa's a great team. They played Nebraska.
They 100%. But we have not seen this from Iowa in a little while. And that's why I thought it was important to bring up. And they now, after getting beat up pretty bad by Michigan, have all of the sudden, a week removed, put up a couple of really impressive performances. Because first of all, this was the first time we've had an Iowa game go over in seven straight games. Because their scoring had not been the same. Well, they just carried this total all by themselves, putting up 102 points in the game. They followed up their incredible win at Ohio State, which was a dominant victory in Columbus. I am very impressed with what Iowa is bringing to the table. They're going to play a desperate Wisconsin squad this weekend who's not been playing great basketball. Iowa can finish things off here, Aaron, very, very impressively in the regular season with tons of momentum getting into that Big Ten tournament.
Yep, and like we said, it is all about momentum in college basketball. So, considering we're heading into the weekend, happy Friday again, everybody. Any other games that you like on the board for college basketball?
So, just for games to watch for this weekend, I advise people to keep an eye on, I'm not sure about betting, but keep an eye on Villanova Providence. It'll be Nova going to battle without Colin Gillespie. Want to see what that looks like. Yep. Because they're going to still make the NCAA tournament 1,000%. So we're going to be betting on this team, of course, even in the Big East tournament. And that's very important as well, Aaron. When we get odds to win the Big East tournament, is Villanova still a favorite? What kind of odds do they get, even if they are favored? And then I would say the biggest game of the weekend, Illinois and Ohio State, once again in Columbus. Illinois trying to capture a Big Ten regular season title, gave themselves that opportunity, beating Michigan three games without Ayo Dosunmu, their best player, three victories. On the other side of the court, Ohio State, who went into a game against Michigan as a top five team in the country and a projected number one overall seed, well, they lost that game, and then they lost to Michigan State, and then they lost to Iowa. They can fix a lot of those problems with a win against Illinois, but a fourth straight loss for the Buckeyes will have people in Columbus panicking.
That'll be a fun game to watch. Mm-hmm. We're getting into some real thick of college basketball this weekend, so I'm excited for that. But we want to switch now to NFL. So Big Ben, he's coming back to the Steelers. He willingly reduced his pay to $14 million from $19 million in his final year of his contract to spread the cash payment through 2020. Adam Schefter tweeted this yesterday. It lowered the cap hit by over $15 million. Also, the team can make the right moves to be as competitive as possible this season. I'm not surprised that Big Ben did this, but I want to talk about the AFC North odds, because right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, we have the Ravens at plus 110, the Browns plus 200, the Steelers then sitting in third plus 280, and the Bengals far out 23-1. Yeah. Are you surprised by these odds, Kevin, or do you think there's value on the Pittsburgh Steelers? I know that we've been talking, obviously, about this potential this potential thing happening with Big Ben. Is he going to stay? Is he going to retire? Are they going to potentially trade him? But everything was kind of on the table there.
So this is why the AFC North is so interesting. The reigning division champions are comfortably the third option here on the FanDuel Sportsbook, right? You go through all these other divisions. The Bills minus money to win theirs. Colts and Titans are right there. You've got the Chiefs, of course. Mm-hmm. They're minus money. Now, Dallas is in a similar situation.
Packers.
That's the NFC East. The Packers, big minus money. Tampa just won a Super Bowl. It is a similar situation in Seattle, funny enough. Seattle, also the reigning division champions, also plus 280
plus 280
to win the conference. So there's a couple of situations that are similar to the one with the Pittsburgh Steelers. The difference, I would say, though, again, is the Niners are getting healthier, and the Rams made a big change at quarterback, right? The NFC East is a situation in which Dak Prescott is supposed to come back at quarterback. Plus, even though Dallas finished third in the division, everybody was below 500. With the AFC North, the Ravens didn't make any drastic changes. The Cleveland Browns aren't going to be making any drastic changes.
Yep.
Things, for the most part, are standing pat. And despite being the reigning division champions, Aaron, people clearly are weighing what they saw to finish the season from Pittsburgh significantly more than what they saw in the beginning of the season.
Well, let's be honest. With Big Ben, we were shocked when they were going undefeated in those games.
Yeah.
We have to be realistic that Big Ben's not Tom Brady. We're not expecting him to have every season as, let's say, we have the expectation of Tom Brady. He is older and whatnot. But I almost feel like it's that situation where you have a quarterback who has a great, obviously he's been with the team forever, but he has a great storyline, the legacy there. You don't want to tell a player, hey, you're done, hang it up. Mm-hmm. So you're going to rework his contract. It's different than, let's say, an Alex Smith, who was a comeback player, AP comeback player of the year. He does theoretically stink, but he has a great storyline. So for the AFC North, like, did the Steelers make the right decision as an organization to keep him and kind of be that key player, or should they have done something different to rebuild? I mean, looking at these odds, we're seeing that they're not expecting them to just come out and blow the AFC North out, and we have all our quarterbacks ready. We know Lamar's going to be with the Ravens. We know Mayfield's going to be with the Browns. Bengals, obviously, the Joe Barrow situation. Hopefully, he's healthy and whatnot, but we're expecting, obviously, that. So it's kind of a situation of, did the Steelers make the right decision, or are they just kind of running off that legacy there?
It's a great question. It's a question that clearly they've been asking themselves in the room, and it's why they didn't come to an agreement with Ben Roethlisberger immediately. There's two schools of thought, I think, Aaron. Oh, last year was a year back from injury. He was shaking off some rust. Things can only get better. Or
he looked bad at the end of the season. It was bad.
Or as the year goes on, things are going to get worse. And he also could be very, very liable for an injury. Now, it's difficult to project injuries, okay? But this is more to do with age. In 2018, Big Ben threw the football 675 times. The next year, his arm basically falls off the bone just because it does, because he threw the ball so many times, he only plays a game and a half. Well, now he comes back this year. Not only did he throw the ball 608 times in the regular season, but thanks to the absolute madness that was the final game against Cleveland, where he threw the ball 68 times, he actually threw the ball 676 times last year, if you count the playoff game. So
what's his, you know, elbow going to look like this year? That's the question. It's the gamble you're taking, and I feel like it's a pretty high gamble.
I agree. I think the Steelers not finishing the season with Ben Roethlisberger as their quarterback because of injury is very live. Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins will then be who they need to turn to. Here's, though, Aaron, and I agree it's tough, but here's why I struggle to really criticize Pittsburgh. What was their other option? Who is their other option? Teddy Bridgewater? No. You're going to move on from Ben for Cam Newton? No, you're not. So they're not in a great position, but I actually think they did the best they could, because at least they're now not paying him as much as they once were supposed to.
And Mason Rudolph and Dwayne Haskins are not the worst backups you could possibly have. You know what I mean? I feel like they can step in, but you do want a quarterback that will play the entire season. And we're already undercutting him, and it's March.
Yeah.
The season didn't even start yet. So
it's
just interesting there. But coming up after the break, we're going to have on James Lynch, MMA journalist, to talk all things about the UFC happening this weekend. Three title fights. Stay with us here on the Early Line. He's coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. And the UFC is back with three title fights this weekend, so it should be fun. Now we bring on MMA journalist James Lynch to talk UFC 259. Hi, James. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about this really stacked card on Saturday night.
Yes, we're excited to have you. So starting off with the, I would say, biggest fight, Blachowicz versus Adesanya. Adesanya is a current middleweight champion and will be looking to become the first undefeated two-weight class champion. Who do you think gets it done in this fight?
I like Israel Adesanya, and I think he is the rightful favorite in this fight. If you look at the odds right now, Jan Blachowicz, the late heavyweight champion, is the underdog, which is a little bit surprising. But Adesanya, younger fighter, hasn't lost in the octagon. I think that's a key thing here, and it's not like he's fighting subpar competition. These are really good fighters, including the former middleweight champion, Robert Whittaker. Now, I know a lot's been made about the size of Adesanya moving up to a new weight class at 205, but I've seen Adesanya in person. He's a pretty big guy, and actually, I don't think people realize he's actually taller and has a reach advantage in this fight over Jan Blachowicz. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to utilize that, if he can handle the power of a Jan Blachowicz in this fight. But I think he gets it done. To me, it's the speed. It's the technique in his striking. He's a guy that's not, he comes from a kickboxing background. He's not going to go out there and get too reckless here. But with Jan Blachowicz, his only chance to win, I think, is by knockout. I don't think you're going to see this fight go to the ground. The question is, can he make lightning strike again, like we saw in the last fight with Dominic Reyes, where he knocked him out to win the title? Can he do that against Adesanya? I think that's a tough task. So I'm going Adesanya here. Younger fighter, faster. I think he gets it done.
Let me, though, follow up, James, a little bit on what you talked about here, the size disparity. I mean, somebody coming up in weight class, there's always going to be a difference, but Adesanya made some headlines saying that he's going to be sub 200 pounds. I mean, when he weighs in for this thing, I mean, we're talking about possibly in that octagon a 30-pound difference. Now, there can be two schools of thought on this. McGregor, at one point when he initially went up, he was like overdoing it, eating steaks every day, trying to catch the weight. Maybe that wasn't the way to do it. For you, I mean, if that, let's just say that's truly a 30-pound difference when they're in the cage, would that not give you a little bit of worry into backing Adesanya in this spot?
A little bit, but it could also play to his advantage. I think having less weight on him means he's a little bit faster, and I think that's the way you beat a Jan Blachowicz, because you know he's going to throw that dangerous punch and potentially knock you out. So how do you combat that? You combat that by speed. Can he hit Adesanya? If you're a little bit lighter, I think that does play into your advantage, but certainly you bring up a good point. Has he ever been hit by a Jan Blachowicz before? We have not really seen that. He's fought guys with knockout power. Whittaker, Costa, Yoel Romero, those all have knockout power, but it's a different type of knockout power at 185 as opposed to 205, so we'll see if that translates on Saturday. But like I said, I think that's actually an advantage for Adesanya.
And Adesanya right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook is -230 for the money line. And then you can also bet on the method of victory and the round outcomes. Is there anything in those markets that you like, or what are you predicting for this?
I like the over in this fight because I think that this could potentially go the distance. Adesanya, I know he finished Paulo Costa in his last fight and Whittaker before that, but, we've seen him go the distance before. The last time he went five rounds, I believe, was against Brad Tavares. It might be a case of where he can't knock out Jan Blachowicz, so that's something to keep in mind here. I think if Adesanya does get a finish, it's going to be later. Adesanya, not typically a guy to finish fights really early, at least over the last, couple fights in terms of his overall body of work. And for Blachowicz, I think it's a case of, if he does win, it might be early, but I think the over's a good spot here, just because again, almost 3-to-1 value there on Adesanya. I think it's a little steep, so maybe you look at that decision prop, or you look at the over in the fight.
And before we move on to the next fight here, I do have to ask, I mean, what's on the line here? And it's not just that light heavyweight title, but Adesanya becoming the champion in what was forever John Jones's division. And, Jones is in this weird spot. Is he going to fight Stipe or Francis or Adesanya? I mean, do you think that Israel at some point down the road finds himself staring across John Jones?
If I'm a betting man right now, I'm going to say no, just because there's a lot of hoops that have to go through. Jones moving up to heavyweight, there's a lot of money involved as well, so I don't know if it's going to sort of line up there. It's really going to depend how Jones does it at heavyweight. It looks like he's going to get the winner of the upcoming Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou fight. If he wins the title there, then that changes things. But if Jones doesn't end up winning a title, that does change a lot here. And also, Adesanya's got to win this fight on Saturday. I mean, as much as I think the pressure's on Blachowicz in this fight, because if he loses, he's blown a big opportunity here. Adesanya can always go back to 185. So to answer your question, I'll say no right now. I think there's too many hoops to go through to make that fight happen.
Interesting. And let's get into now the co-main event. So we have Amanda Nunes trying to defend her featherweight belt against Anderson. Nunes is the heavy favorite on the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, -12,000. Anderson +680. Is there any shot for Anderson here in this fight?
I think there is. What's interesting about this fight is that Anderson is a striker. It's a lot different of a matchup than, say, when Nunes fought Felicia Spencer or Jermaine Durmandermy. We've seen Anderson get knockout wins in the octagon, and I think she has a puncher's chance here, but that's about it. I mean, how often is it we see a UFC card where you're literally seeing boxing odds? I mean, we had the Canelo Alvarez fight last weekend. That's kind of what we're seeing here with Amanda Nunes, a heavy favorite in this one. But saying that, the style matchup does intrigue me, right? Because Nunes has a clear path to victory here. If she wants to take Anderson to the ground, that's her weakness. All of Anderson's losses, for the most part, other than the decision loss to Holly Holm, have been by submission. So if Nunes wants to make it a short night, you take it to the ground and you get the win by submission. But I have a feeling Nunes, you know, she wants to keep that moniker of being the GOAT, the best of all time. I think she stands and trades. And if that happens, I think Megan does have a shot here. But obviously, I got to go with Amanda Nunes. I'm sticking with the odds here.
Yeah, I mean, I think realistically, a lot of people will try to get creative, James, as to how then they play this. I mean, even parlaying an Amanda Nunes is really not worth it. Nunes, though, it's so fascinating by knockout, even money, by submission, plus 210, by points is 5-1. And I feel like what she did in her last fight against Spencer, basically after the 25-minute decision going, oh, yeah, well, people said that I didn't have the cardio, so I just wanted to prove them wrong, so I decided to go the distance, which is insane, because most people, when they get in the octagon, their goal is to then quickly win and get out of the octagon. She's like, no, I'm comfortable. I can do whatever I want in here. If Nunes gets the job done, which is what we expect, what do you think the best value would be in terms of how she gets it done?
I like the knockout prop. That was something I was taking a look at just because I think she's going to want to still show that she has that, you know, knockout power. We saw her a few fights ago knock out Chris Cyborg to win the featherweight title, and Cyborg hadn't been knocked out in, ever, right? So, I mean, it's possible she goes that route and really tries to take care of it, but I really feel like Nunes has gotten really comfortable with her stand-up. I think she's going to want to display that in this fight, and I think more likely than not she gets the knockout as opposed to the submission, unless Megan's taking some shots and she's surviving. Then that things could change, but I really feel like Nunes is going to get the finish in this one. You could take the knockout prop. If you want to be even safer, take the inside the distance prop. This isn't going five rounds, in my opinion.
Interesting. Let's get into the third title fight now then. Men's bantamweight champion Petr Yan looking to defend his title against Aljamain Sterling. Both fighters right now on FanDuel Sportsbook at minus 110. So that screams to me that they think this fight is going to be close. Which way do you see it going?
Well, it's actually interesting. Yan opened as the favorite, and Sterling was the underdog, and I actually didn't know that the line is even now, but it makes sense because this is a very competitive matchup. The big question that's sort of coming into this fight is the level of competition. If you look at that, Aljamain Sterling's fought better fighters overall. I mean, Yan won the title from Jose Aldo, who's still a very capable contender in that division, but that's pretty much his only good win, whereas Sterling, he has a win over Corey Sandhagen, he has a win over Cody Stamann, Brett Johns. He's got a lot more body of work to show from what he's done in the octagon, so that's where things get interesting. Now, Sterling's a wrestler. Yan's got very good takedown defense. I think it's almost at 88%, but I think Sterling's athleticism and the fact that he's just getting better every fight, we're seeing things with him that we're not seeing with other bantamweights, where he's getting, you know, a quick win over Corey Sandhagen, right? You're not seeing that with Yan. You're seeing sort of later finishes or decision wins from him. I like Sterling here. I think if you had got him at the underdog money, good for you. If not, I still think there's value on him as the pick'em price here. I really like Sterling in this fight to become the new bantamweight champion.
And I'm curious, James, on how you might see this going. Now, trust me, I think picking anybody to win this fight is tough enough. I mean, the odds tell you that. It's minus 110. How either one of these guys is going to get the job done is even more difficult. I mean, everything. The favorite option is Yan by points, and that's plus 280. I mean, it's almost 3-1 to try and nail down how this happens. But that is a lot of plus money then. So people can try and maybe throw a couple shekels here and there, see if it works out for them. You like Aljo. How would you lean to Aljo getting the job done?
I think it's going to be a decision. If you look at Yan, he's never been finished before. I know Sterling did, finish a guy in Corey Sandhagen who'd never been finished in his career in the fight before, but I really feel like there's going to be a feeling out process there. And I think when you get into those later rounds, we saw Yan sort of take over against Aldo. I don't think he's going to do that against Sterling. Sterling's in the prime of his career right now. We've seen the cardio. He's definitely top notch. We saw that in the Pedro Munhoz fight. This is a guy that can go, a long time in the octagon. So I would look at that decision prop, if anything, whether you're going on the side of Aldo or Piotr on, but Aljo's been finished one time in his career, and that was Marlon Moraes, but outside of that, he's been pretty durable, so I don't see a finish here.
So outside of these three title fights, so we have Adesanya favored, we have Nunes heavy favorite there, even money for Yan and Sterling. Are there any fights that you like in the preliminary card, or do you have any sleeper picks that you could give us?
Yeah, so I actually really like, there's a few actually. I like the Kyler Phillips and the Song Yadong fight, which is in the bantamweight division. Phillips has been on a roll lately, and he's still only 25 years old, making a lot of really good improvements. He's on this card with his teammates, Casey Kenney and Mario Bautista. I like him as the dog here. I think he really has, he's really catching Song at a good time. Song's had two fights, his last two fights, very controversial in terms of the decisions. You know, one was a draw, one was a decision. I think this is the fight where his luck runs out here. I really like Phillips here. Really explosive, really good stand-up. I think he pulls off the upset here. And the other fight I'm looking at as well, another dog I like, is Tim Elliott in the flyweight division over Jordan Espinoza. Elliott, a lot more experience. You know, he's really turned things around since going back to Missouri and training at Glory MMA. He looks like a different fighter, and we saw that in the last win over Ryan Benoit. I think he goes out there and wins a decision over Espinoza. I think he you know, looks very impressive. So those are two fights I'm looking at on the preliminary portion of the card.
One more prelim fight I wanted to get your thoughts on. Dom Cruz. Listen, when a guy like Dom is hung at plus money against the guy, Casey Kenney, he's just not as well known as Dominic Cruz. I think there's going to be a lot of people who instinctually go, oh, well, I got to take Cruz. Is that how you see it? Or do you think that he's an underdog in this spot for a reason?
I think he's the underdog in this spot because of the fact he hasn't fought that much. But it's tough to say. This does look like a bit of a trap here for people betting this fight because, you know, Cruz did lose his last fight, and I think it's, you know, he hasn't won a fight in a couple of years. I really feel like, you know, I think Kenny's got the momentum right now, and I really liked what I've seen from Kenny. Kenny seems to be getting better every fight. I think people have figured out Dominic Cruz. I'm going with that. I think, you know, he's sort of been, you know, this tactician, but I think a guy like Kenny has figured that out. I think he's going to win a decision over Dom Cruz, and I think he's the rightful favorite here.
And James, as an MMA journalist, I just want to ask you, if you could see any fight that you would want to see this year the most, what would it be?
Well, it's got to be Jones and Adesanya, right? I mean, it's too bad that Jones decided to leave the division when Adesanya moves up, but that's the fight everyone wants to see. I'm so intrigued by that, and there's a good back and forth. I don't know if you guys have been following on social media. These guys don't like each other, so that makes it even more exciting. But just talent-wise, two guys really in the prime of their careers, we got to see that fight happen.
And James, before we get you out of here, only about a minute or so left. That name that stands out the most behind you and that awesome little background you got there is McGregor. Look, we talk MMA, you got to bring him up. Thoughts on what's next for Conor? Because I know there's a lot of mixed opinions as to how that's going to go. Again, less than a minute left here.
I think it's a mistake that he's going to fight Poirier again. I think he needs a bounce back fight. He just got knocked out. Why are we running this back again when you have the opportunity to give McGregor a bounce back fight, get his confidence back, and then fight Poirier after this? But it sounds like the trilogy fight is next. I don't know who wins that fight. McGregor, you know, he wasn't able to combat Poirier's game plan. I think we will see Conor back, but I think a Poirier fight might be a bit of a mistake here because he needs to get a much needed win here.
James, here on the early line, we had a huge debate because when this fight went down, Kevin really liked Conor McGregor, and I had Dustin Poirier, and I was that one in the million that got lucky. And honestly, with everything that happened in that. But thank you so much for joining us this morning. You can follow James on Twitter at LynchOnSports. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, James. And guys, stay with us here on the early line. Coming up, we have a lot to talk about and get to, including the NFL and the NBA. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Erin Dolan. It is now time for our Hero of the Night.
It is time for our Hero of the Night. We made everybody wait until the final segment of the week, but it will be worth the wait because, for me, another personal one here, had the over in Baylor, Oklahoma State. Things looked good. All of a sudden, then, Cade Cunningham was injured, and I started to get worried. 31 seconds left. We had it at 149. That was the over-under. We were sitting on a push. Nobody wants to watch a game the whole way and get a push. Neither does Mark Vital of the Baylor Bears. He scored 4 points. 50% of his points came with 14 seconds left. When, despite being up and the game being over, he could have pulled it back out. Instead, He not only made a layup, Aaron, it was a 360 layup. It was a thing of beauty. Mark Vital, my personal hero of the night, very deserving, getting us the over in Baylor, Oklahoma State.
I like it. So that's Kevin's hero of the night. I'm going to give one quickly. I'm going with Claude Giroux for the Philadelphia Flyers. Flyers last night won 4-3. But if you didn't watch this game, maybe you tuned out because after the first period, the Penguins were up by 3 goals. Claude Giroux last night having 2 goals, 3 points, 4 shots on goal. He kind of gave that momentum back for the team. Captain stepping up. So he's my hero of the night.
Well deserved. I like a little double up there with hero of the night. A lot of good options last night.
We love two heroes.
Yeah, but I think it works. And ultimately, I think another hero for you is probably Kevin Durant because he got injured and then it forced us to do a redraft. And I think things came out a lot more even this go around. Also, Team LeBron going for 4 consecutive wins, a perfect 4-0 possibly for Team LeBron. Never lost since he's been drafting all-star teams. That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, Kev's a big LeBron James fan. So we'll be watching the NBA All-Star Game. We also have some UFC this weekend, college basketball, a lot of things that you can bet on. So go ahead to the FanDuel Sportsbook. We'll see you next week, 7 to 9 a.m. here on the Early Line.